The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Boris Johnson was interviewed by Andrew Marr this morning and unsurprisingly, coronavirus was top of the agenda. With much of England now placed under Tier 4, the highest level of COVID restrictions, Marr put it to the Prime Minister that an even higher fifth tier could soon be on the way.
Tier 5 people are talking about.
What I'm trying to get, the message I'm trying to get over to people is I think the same time I was on with you last time in October, you said, how does it look? And I said we were going to have a very bumpy period at Christmas and beyond, but by the spring things would be better. Mm. I stick to that. I think that's roughly how it's going to be. It may be that we need to do things in the next few weeks that will be tougher in many parts of the country. I'm fully reconciled to that. And I bet the people of this country are reconciled to that.
Because what might tougher be?
Until the vaccine really comes on stream in a massive way, we're fighting this virus with the same set of tools. What we're doing now is using the tiering system, which is a very tough system.
Tougher.
Alas, probably about to get tougher, to keep things under control. But we'll review it.
Okay.
We'll review it.
Let's.
And we have the prospect of vaccines coming down the track in their tens of millions, offering people literally life and hope.
I think
is something that should keep people going in what I predicted back on your show in October would be a very bumpy period right now.
Johnson also had the following message for parents of primary school children across most, but by no means all, of England.
Should parents of primary school children in England send them to school tomorrow morning?
Yes, absolutely they should in the areas where schools are open. And what we're doing clearly is grappling with a new variant of the virus, which is surging particularly in London and the South East, and that's why we've had to take exceptional measures for some parts to close primary schools, keep primary schools closed temporarily. Not something anybody wants to do. We've really fought very hard throughout this pandemic across the country to keep schools open, but lots of reasons for that. Schools are safe. Very, very important to stress that the threat to the risk to kids, to young people is really very, very, very small indeed, as the scientists continually attest. The risk to staff is very small. Mm. And of course, the benefits of education are so huge. Overwhelmingly, we want to keep our young people, keep children, keep kids in education because that's the best thing for them. So that's why we've worked so hard to do it. So I would advise that all parents thinking about what to do, look at away or areas. Overwhelmingly, you'll be in a part of the country where primary schools tomorrow will be open.
With this year's Scottish elections on the horizon, Marr put the following scenario to Johnson.
Imagine me as a Scottish voter sitting in Edinburgh or Glasgow. Maybe I voted in favour of the union in the referendum. But since then, I've seen Brexit happen and I don't like Brexit. And I've seen the way your government's behaved over the coronavirus pandemic, and I prefer Nicola Sturgeon's version of that. And I want my country, Scotland, to leave the UK. What are the democratic tools in my hands to do that?
Well, I think that, obviously, the most important thing is the referendum that you had in 2014, which was a very important...
Before Brexit and before the pandemic, things have changed. And a lot of people want to leave the UK.
Life moves on, things change. I don't... If you're saying that you would like to have another referendum...
This Scottish voter would like another referendum and wants the Democrat... He's only got a vote, so he wants to use that vote to allow it to happen. How can they do that?
I think the only point I would make is that referendums, in my experience, direct experience in this country, are not particularly jolly events.
They change things.
They don't have a notably unifying force in the national mood. They should be only once in a generation. And I think that was what.
What is different about the English wanting to leave the EU and having a referendum and being allowed to do that, and Scotland wanting to leave the UK and doing exactly the same thing? What's the difference?
The difference is that we had a referendum in 1975, and we then had another one in 2016. That seems to be about the right sort of gap.
Marr was also joined by the former Chief Scientific Officer Sir Mark Walport, who is an advisor to the government's SAGE Committee. Walport gave his view on the steps that may be necessary to combat the virus.
Well, we now have a much more transmissible variant, and I'm afraid this is the sort of natural evolution of viruses. The ones that can transmit the most effectively have an advantage over other variants. And so it's clear that this new variant is transmitting more readily. It's transmitting more readily in younger age groups as well. It's important to note that it doesn't appear to cause worse disease or that it's going to be more resistant to the effects of the vaccine, but it is going to be very, very difficult to keep it under control without much tighter social distancing measures.
And would that include closing schools?
Well, potentially. I mean, we know that transmission occurs within schools. We know that a person between 12 and 16 is 7 times more likely than others in a household to bring the infection into a household. And we know that there was a small but a dip in the number of amount of transmission in school children after the half term, which then went up again when they went back.
What more could the government be telling us to do? What more could we be doing now to try and stop this?
Well, it really, at the end of the day, the thing that actually stops the virus, and we know that it can do, is keeping people apart. The virus can only get from one person to another through proximity. And so it really is about doing everything we possibly can to keep ourselves as safe as possible.
These restrictions have been in place since December the 20th or thereabouts, these Tier 4 restrictions, and yet the epidemic is spreading. Hospitals are quite close to being overwhelmed around the country. Are these Tier 4 restrictions, therefore, enough? Really?
It's the Tier 4 restrictions, it's obeying them, it is thinking about breaking essentially every possible route of transmission we possibly can. Those are the things that are absolutely necessary, and it is pretty clear we're going to need more.
Marr spoke to Arlene Foster, the First Minister of Northern Ireland. With the requirement now for checks on goods coming from Britain, Marr suggested that Foster had not been left with the kind of Brexit that she wanted.
Do you accept that there is now a border in the Irish Sea?
Well, it's my job to mitigate against that, and we've been doing that through a number of committees. There's a regulatory issue there.
But it looks very like a border.
Well, you know, I could stand here and bemoan the fact that we have left the European Union with a protocol. I wish that that wasn't the case. Or I can now look for the opportunities as we move out of the EU. We're out of the customs union. We're out of the common agricultural policy, the common fisheries policy. But we do have to deal with this regulatory issue for 4 years. And then the Assembly votes on whether they want to remain within that regulatory system for goods. And I hope by that stage that people will see that it's much better to move out of those regulations and into the global market, which the rest of the UK can engage in.
Do you look at this process and worry that this may have weakened the British Union, as it were, the British Northern Irish Union? I know that some of your colleagues, the Sinn Féin colleagues, not surprisingly, see this as a huge opportunity and the beginning of the process for a united Ireland and a border poll, that this is the beginning of that.
Well, they've been arguing that for 50 years and longer now that they're moving towards that situation. But let me say very clearly, actually, we have seen this year more than most in 2020 the fact that it is so important to have the union between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. We have benefited greatly in terms of how we deal with COVID. We have had £3 billion from the Westminster Exchequer given to Northern Ireland to help us to deal with COVID. We've been able to benefit from the fact that the UK was the first nation in the world to have the vaccination rolled out. We have, of course, our National Health Service, something that isn't in the Republic of Ireland. And I think it is important to say that, of course, republicanism and nationalism wanted a no-deal Brexit. They didn't want a free trade because that would have meant that they could have pointed to the disaster of Brexit. What we have now is a gateway of opportunity. It's a gateway of opportunity for the whole of the UK and for Northern Ireland.
Times Radio's Gloria De Piero and Tom Newton-Dunn spoke to former Prime Minister Tony Blair. They asked Blair, who has long been an enthusiast for the EU, what he made of Keir Starmer's Labour Party backing the government's EU trade deal.
Would you have voted for this Brexit deal in Parliament?
I would have backed the leader on this. I mean, look, it's a tactical question for the Labour Party, because the problem is it's open to your opponents to say if you don't back the deal, then you're voting for no deal. But the truth is, we wouldn't have started from here and shouldn't have started from here.
Your swiftness of acceptance that you would have voted for Boris Johnson's deal took Gloria and I by surprise there.
Well, I would have backed the leader on it. Look, there was a case for abstaining, and there was a case for voting for it because the alternative's no deal. What I'm really saying is that's a decision that the Labour leader's got to take. I don't think it particularly matters to the Labour Party either way. I think what does matter is that we're still in a position where we're pointing out what the problems with this deal are. And most important of all, and you know, I'm setting this out in a piece I've written for today, saying we have to understand that if we don't adopt a new agenda and a new plan for the country post-Brexit, then there is nothing that Brexit's going to do for Britain on its own. It's going to leave us economically weaker and with less political influence. And so the only way I make sense of Brexit is to treat it as shock therapy, that we then realise we've got to take certain big decisions as a country. We've got to set out a new agenda for the future.
And finally, the Equalities Minister, Liz Truss, told Newton Dunn about why she was scrapping the policy of unconscious bias training for civil servants.
You also attacked unconscious bias training in your speech. You think it does nothing to make the workplace fundamentally fairer. Why did you say that?
Well, there's a lot of evidence that it simply doesn't work. And I think the issue with techniques like unconscious bias training is rather than addressing the root causes of unfairness in the workplace, they're instead trying to change people's behaviour. And it's been shown that the training doesn't actually work. What we need are things like more transparency. We need clearer routes for progression in the workplace so we can have a more meritocratic workplace. Those are the types of techniques that work. And unconscious bias training, I think, is a waste of time and money.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.